ಯಶೋದಾನಂದನ ಬ್ರಜ ಜನರಂಜನ ಯಮುನಾ ತೀರವನಚಾರಿ ಯಮುನಾ ತೀರವನಚಾರಿ ಜಯ ರಾಧಾ ಮಾಧವ ಕುಂಜ ವಿಹಾರಿ
ಜಯ ಓಂ ವಿಷ್ಣುಪಾದ ಪರಮಹಂಸ ಪರಿವ್ರಾಜಕಾಚಾರ್ಯ ಅಷ್ಟೋತ್ತರ ಶತ ಶ್ರೀ ಶ್ರೀಮದ್ ಡಿವೈನ್ ಗ್ರೇಸ್ ಎಸಿ ಭಕ್ತಿ ವೇದಾಂತ ಸ್ವಾಮಿ ಶಿವ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದ ಕಿ ಜಯ ಅನಂತ ಕೋಟಿ ವೈಷ್ಣವ ವೃಂದ ಕಿ ಜಯ ಗ್ರಂಥರಾಜ್ ಶ್ರೀಮದ್ ಭಾಗವತಂ ಕಿ ಜಯ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರೀಸ್ ಟು ದಿ ಅಸೆಂಬಲ್ ಡಿವೋಟೀಸ್ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರೀಸ್ ಟು ಶ್ರೀ ಶ್ರೀ ಗುರು ಅಂಡ್ ಗೌರಂಗ ನಾರಾಯಣಂ ನಮಸ್ಕೃತ್ಯ ನರಂ ಚೈವ ನರೋತ್ತಮಂ ದೇವೀಂ ಸರಸ್ವತೀಂ ವ್ಯಾಸಂ ತತೋ ಜಯ ಮುದೀರಯೇತ್ ನಷ್ಟಪ್ರಾಯೇಷ ಭದ್ರೇಷು ನಿತ್ಯಂ ಭಾಗವತ ಸೇವಯ ಭಗವತಿ ಉತ್ತಮ ಶ್ಲೋಕೇ ಭಕ್ತಿರ್ಭವತಿ ನೈಷ್ಠಿಕೇ ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೇ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೇ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೇ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ಕ್ಯಾಂಟೋ 7 ಚಾಪ್ಟರ್ 15 ಟೆಕ್ಸ್ಟ್ 23 ಆನ್ವೀಕ್ಷಿಕ್ಯ ಶೋಕಮೋಹೋ ದಂಭಂ ಮಹದುಪಾಸಯ ಯೋಗಾಂತರಾಯನ್ ಮೌನೇನ ಹಿಂಸಾಂ ಕಾಮಾದಿ ಅನೀಹಯ ಆನ್ವೀಕ್ಷಿಕ್ಯ ಶೋಕಮೋಹೋ ದಂಭಂ ಮಹದುಪಾಸಯ ಯೋಗಾಂತರಾಯನ್ ಮೌನೇನ ಹಿಂಸಾಂ ಕಾಮಾದ್ಯನೀಹಯ ಆನ್ವೀಕ್ಷಿಕ್ಯ ಶೋಕಮೋಹೌ ದಂಭಂ ಮೋಹದ್ ಉಪಾಸಯ ಯೋಗಾಂತರಾಯನ್ ಮೌನೇನ ಹಿಂಸಾಂ ಕಾಮಾದ್ಯನೀಹಯ ಆನ್ವೀಕ್ಷಿಕ್ಯ ಶೋಕಮೋಹೌ ದಂಭಂ ಮಹದುಪಾಸಯ ಯೋಗಾಂತರಾಯನ್ ಮೌನೇನ ಹಿಂಸಾಂ ಕಾಮಾದ್ಯನೀಹಯ ಆನ್ವೀಕ್ಷಿಕ್ಯ ಶೋಕಮೋಹ ಆನ್ವೀಕ್ಷಿಕ್ಯ ಶೋಕಮೋಹೌ ದಂಭಂ ಮಹದುಪಾಸಯ ಯೋಗಾಂತರಾಯನ್ ಮೌನೇನ ಹಿಂಸಾಂ ಕಾಮಾದ್ಯನೀಹಯ ಲೇಡೀಸ್ ಪ್ಲೀಸ್ ಆನ್ವೀಕ್ಷಿಕ್ಯ ಶೋಕಮೋಹೌ ದಂಭಂ ಮಹದುಪಾಸಯ ಯೋಗಾಂತರಾಯನ್ ಮೌನೇನ ಹಿಂಸಾ ಮಾಮಾದನೀಹಯ आन्दिक्षिक्या शोकमोहौ दम्भं महदुपासया योगान्तरायन्मौनेन हिंसां कामाद्यनीहया आन्विक्ष्या by deliberation upon material and spiritual subject matters. Shoka, lamentation, moha and illusion, dambham, false pride, mahat, a Vaishnava, upasaya, by serving, yoga antarayan, obstacles on the path of yoga, maunena, by silence, himsam, envy, kama adi, for sense gratification, anihaya, without endeavor. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada ki jai. By discussing spiritual knowledge, one can conquer lamentation and illusion. By serving a great devotee, one can become prideless. And by keeping silent, one can avoid obstacles on the path of mystic yoga. And simply by stopping sense gratification, one can conquer envy. Purport. If one's son has died, one may be certainly affected by lamentation and illusion and cry for the dead son. But one may overcome lamentation and illusion by considering the verses of Bhagavad Gita. Jatasya hi dhruvor mrityur dhruvam janma mritasya cha. As the soul transmigrates, one who has taken birth must give up the present body and then he must certainly accept another body. There should be no cause for lamentation. Therefore, Lord Krishna says, dhiras tatra namuhyati. One who is a dhira or sober, who is learned in philosophy and established in knowledge, cannot be unhappy over the transmigration of the soul. Om ajnana timirandhasya jnananjana shalakaya chaksurun militam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha shri chaitanya mano bhishtam sthapitam yena bhutale Svayam rupa kadamahyam dadati svapadantikam vancha kalpaturubhyascha kripa sindhubhya evacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shrivasadi Gora Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. So this chapter is called Instructions for Civilized Human Beings. Actually, they're instructions for civilizing human beings. When Mohandas Karamchand Gandhi visited England the first time, he traveled in a small dhoti and no shirt, but a uttariya. And everyone came out to see who's this person from India who was dressed pretty much like a beggar, but had the entire British Raj troubled. And so one of the and he had negated everything that was foreign. It had to be Swadeshi. It has to be made in India. So in London, they interviewed him. And they asked him, because they showed him all the motor cars, the factories, and everyone wearing suits. And it was part of the Industrial Revolution. So they asked him, so what do you think about Western civilization? He said, that's a good idea. You should begin it. To civilize or civilized does not mean well-dressed. most people do think civilized means well-dressed, because we are in the time and age where there's so much focus on externalities that a well-dressed person passes on, or passes on as a very civilized person. But real civilization is in one's speech, and more importantly, in one's character. And all these verses are to refine one's character and refine one's speech, not just how well they're dressed or not. So it's very easy to fall for the externalities and lose the substance, or even oversee or overlook or ignore the real substance. And the real substance of character in ordinary circumstances does not manifest. Real character manifests in adversity. And therefore this material world is created such that there is constant adversity to refine our character, or as an opportunity to refine our character. And this is what separates the saints from the swindlers, if you will. That the saint is one who in adversity will always manifest that fantastic character, which becomes a shining beacon for others to follow. And the swindler will be exposed in adversity. Therefore, we find that in the life of all the great personalities, Krishna demonstrates their character by putting them in adversity. So the previous verses talk about different ways of refining that character. In this verse, there are four such things. First is anvikshikya. Anvikshikya means by thinking about, by considering spiritual knowledge. Shikya is to learn. Anvikshikya means to contemplate on it. So here one should contemplate what is the difference between material and spiritual. Suppose our body gets hurt. Of course it's painful. And we are asked that in that pain we consider, I am not this body. And this pain is experienced or felt because of my identifying with this body. So that's the verse Prabhupada gives. He gives a more drastic example. When one loses one's son, son dies, it's the most difficult thing to lose a son. And Prabhupada writes that one should be sufficiently equipped with knowledge to consider jatasya hi dhruvam mrityur. Dhruvam mritya janmasya cha tasya parihariya arthe natum shochutam arhasi. Krishna is describing right in the beginning that such knowledge will allow us to separate ourselves from the pain. Generally we put medicine, or in the modern sense, the medicine that is a chemical that dulls that part of the brain or numbs that part of the brain that experiences pain. So we think, I'm relieved of pain. But the real relief is detachment. And that detachment comes by dint of knowledge. And therefore it says, anvikshikya, that one should have sufficient knowledge to contemplate upon. And that's the countermeasure or an antidote for shoka moha. Lamentation and illusion. Lamentation is the sense of loss. Mostly lamentation comes from the sense of loss. And the sense of loss comes from the idea that I own something. It's called proprietorship. And as soon as I think I own something, then when that thing goes away, I lost something. So the countermeasure is proper knowledge. I really don't own anything. In fact, nothing actually we own. Even this body is given by nature. It's a product of the permutation and combination of material elements. So that's the first one. To counteract lamentation and illusion, one needs to have sufficient spiritual knowledge to deliberate upon. The second is dambham mahad upasaya. Upasana means to worship or to serve. Mahad upasaya means to serve the great devotees. Prabhupada says mahad is a Vaishnava. Dambham is the countermeasure for pride. Anyone who's proud must serve a Vaishnava to be relieved of that pride. Now, who has pride? Every conditioned entity who has a material body has pride. Pride means a sense of identity. And the sense of identity we have is, I am this body. And because I am this body, then I have all these qualities. I have strength, I have knowledge, I have money, I have beauty, I have skills, I have certain abilities. These are all sources of pride. As Kunti Devi says, Janma Aishwarya Shruta Shri. These are the four categories that cause pride in someone. Great birth, great wealth, great knowledge, and great beauty or opulence. And the countermeasure is Mahat Upasaya, serving a Vaishnava. Therefore we see that every case of spiritual transformation begins with when the student meets and serves the teacher or the spiritual master. Without that, there is never a case of transformation. There is no case in history where anyone has been transformed without that service to a great person. Is there any story? Never. We'll come to stories also. I have some nice stories. So it's dambham mahad upasaya. And these are necessary so that one's internal, one's inner character becomes sharp. Third one, he says, yoga antarayan maunena. Antarayan means obstacles on the path. Basically, ayana means to move. And anta means that which obstructs. So antarayana is obstacles on the path. Yoga antarayana. On the path of yoga, when there are obstacles, what's the solution? It says maunena, by silence. What's the connection? Very interesting connection between silence and moving on. And the fourth, he says himsam kamadi anihaya. Kamadi anihaya. Anihaya means without any endeavor. Easily. And himsam. The word himsa actually means violence. But Prabhupada's indicating himsam means envy. It's the envy that causes a person to become violent. There's a difference between envy and jealousy. Envy is, according to Ravindra Swarup Prabhu, writes, envy means I am uncomfortable with what someone else has and I want it. And jealousy is I'm very uncomfortable with what I have and I don't want anyone else to have it. Jealously guarding something, one is envious of what someone else has. And the countermeasure for that, he says, kamadi anihaya, is from stopping sense gratification. So these are the four things to remember for today. that one should have sufficient spiritual knowledge to contemplate upon as one is going through lamentation and illusion. Second, one should serve a great personality, a Vaishnava, to become free of pride. Third, that as we face, as anyone faces obstacles on the path of yoga, one should be silent. And the fourth one is to counteract envy, one should be sense controlled. So a little bit more discussion on this. Generally what happens is lamentation is an expression of some pain of loss or some pain of how we did not have any control over the past. Now we don't have any control over something that we are experiencing. That's called lamentation. And the sense of lamentation actually grows when a person feels that they had some ability to control it. Unfortunately, none of us has any ability to control anything. It is only illusion to think that, oh, I am a leader, I say something and others do, I am in control. There's nothing like that. Others are in control only because they have agreed to be in. The moment they decide not to be in, finished. There's no control over anyone. Right? We've seen great revolutions where the followers who go rah, rah, rah of the leader, the moment they decide, we don't want this guy, finished. They're completely done. French Revolution or whatever you want to pick. The moment, so the real control lies in the followers. The moment they agree, yeah, okay, this fellow can lead us, you're fine. And if they disagree, you're done. And each one of us, as the conditioned soul, the moha, the illusion is the sense of controlling. Now, one may not think I'm a great controller. No one thinks like that. But the sense of control is in removing anything that's unpredictable from our path. We want to make life as predictable as possible. And we have certain things. Oh, if I have good education, my life is quite predictable. I'll do well. If I have sufficient money in reserve, it's predictable. You know, I will not have any difficulties. If I keep my body healthy, I can predict, you know, that I'll have a good, healthy, long life. We try constantly at every moment and in general to hedge ourselves against the unpredictability. This is how the stock market works too, right? You see the past performance of a company, you look at what assets they have, you look at the management team, and you say, I think they'll do pretty well. I'm going to bet my money on it. And then they teach you diversification. You don't put all your eggs in one basket. You have certain, you create a portfolio so it balances across different industries or whatever, such that your pocket of money always sees some growth. So you index it against whatever, S&P 500 or whatever, and say, oh, I'm doing well against the index. It's predictable. My money will grow. And there's always, always the fine print in any investment. What is that fine print, Mohit? Perfect. Past performance does not indicate any way future performance. Because tomorrow, everything can crash. Everything can crash very horribly. But we feel, oh, I'm diversified. I'm pretty okay. It's not so bad. And once in a while, it's actually even true that the market dips, but your fund has grown. You're like, oh, see? It is that illusion. Illusion works in a way that it convinces us. Yeah, your thinking is right. Because if illusion told us, no, your thinking was wrong, we wouldn't be doing anything what we're doing. This is the power of illusion. But to counter that As soon as illusion breaks, lamentation sets in. The illusion that, oh, I'm going to have a very happy life. Everything is smooth ride, smooth sail. Lamentation. So the countermeasure is proper knowledge. Knowledge of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna Prabhupada's quoting, Jatasya hi dhruvo mrityur. This is not just for living beings, that anyone who's born has to die. It's a very universal principle. Anything in this material world that has come into being will be finished. And particularly for life, he says, Dhruvam janma mrutasya cha. And one who's dead will definitely be born again. The word Dhruvam appears twice in this verse. The first line is, definitely one who's born will die, and definitely one who's dead will be born again. Means life continues. And Prabhupada writes that this knowledge is important to have so that one can separate oneself from lamentation. Very, very important. Therefore, devotees go to console people when they have some loss in the family. This is the role of the devotees. If everyone goes and cries with the person, yeah, very bad, then what's the benefit for anyone? Someone should be there to give transcendental knowledge. Of course, we should be careful how we do it. Our movement has suffered from this line called, you're not this body, Prabhu. Has suffered quite a bit. But it's important. Now you see, when Hiranyaksha was killed, and everyone was crying, the queens, they were crying, a little boy, Yamraj, who took the form of a little boy, he came and he spoke transcendental knowledge. When Chitraketu lost his son, both Narada Muni and Parvat Muni came to help Chitraketu out of his lamentation. When Arjuna is in lamentation, Krishna comes to speak Bhagavad Gita. You always need someone. When Vyasadeva is lamenting, oh, what's wrong? I'm despondent. Oh, Narada Muni appears. In every situation, without that knowledge, one cannot transcend lamentation. Dambham Mahadupasaya. Pride does not allow a person to bend. And humility is what is required to bend. Because without that bending, one cannot receive transcendental knowledge. When Ekalavya, this famous character in Mahabharata, you know the story of Ekalavya? Once Dronacharya was the teacher for the Pandavas and the Kauravas. He was teaching them archery. And Arjuna was the best of all. So once he was traveling with his group, and there was a dog that was barking. And suddenly out of nowhere, 7 arrows were shot into the dog's mouth in one bark. And the dog was made silent without killing the dog. So if you have any interest in physics, as soon as you shoot an arrow or a bullet, first it accelerates and then it decelerates. It decelerates because of resistance in the air. But that resistance is very small. Therefore, the bullet travels a long distance. But to actually shoot an arrow with decelerating speed is a very special art. It's almost inconceivable. And that too, if you've seen a dog bark, its one bark is very quick. And in that split second, to shoot 7 decelerating arrows without killing the dog requires great skill. So everyone was shocked. Who's this person? So they saw a young boy, whatever, a young teenager, whatever, who walked up to Dronacharya, and Dronacharya said, who are you? Even Arjuna said, wow, who's this guy? He said, my name is Ekalavya. Oh. And the first thing they ask, you know, at least in cultured places, is when they see someone behaving well, the first thing they ask is, who's your parent? Or who's your teacher? Because everyone agrees that any good in a person is because it's a gift from the previous generation. It's not something that manifests like that. It's always given. So they always ask, who's your parent? So they ask, who's your teacher? And Ekalavya said, you, Dronacharya. Dronacharya said, I never taught you anything. He said, I've always accepted you as teacher and I always pray to you. And this is my skill. So Dronacharya told him, all that is very nice. I did not agree to be your teacher. I don't want to be your teacher. So I think you should cease and desist. So he went away, seemingly dejected. A few days later, they saw him again. And he was still practicing his archery. And they noticed that he had morphed a deity of Dronacharya with clay and used to worship that deity and then continue his practice. So Dronacharya came to him and said, oh, looks like you haven't taken my instruction. I told you not to don't accept you as my student. No, you are my teacher. So Dronacharya said, oh, if I am your teacher, then you should give me Guru Dakshina. Fees, tuition fees. And what is the tuition fee? He said, please cut off your right thumb and give it to me. So Ekalavya had to cut it off. And from that day, Ekalavya could not shoot an arrow anymore. Because without a thumb, you can't pull the bowstring. And so this example is quoted as from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, as the pride in a student had to be cut down by Dronacharya. Because this knowledge, Dronacharya picked up very quickly that this guy is a very proud and arrogant fellow. And such powerful knowledge in the hands of such a person will cause more harm, as they call it nowadays, what is it? Rogue nations who get their nuclear technology, then they will cause more harm. Of course, that's a political thing. But he understood that knowledge in the hands of an unqualified, arrogant person causes more danger and harm. So he told him, cut off your thumb. Wherever there is pride, we find that the great Vaishnava will cut it to help the person. Arjuna, in the beginning of the war, when he was feeling lamentation, but he was saying, I am going to reject this war. I am going to take the high road. I am going to be in a forgiving mood. And Krishna says, first thing, you're talking like a fool. Ashochan anvashochastam pragya vadam chabhasase. You're lamenting, but speaking good words. Ashochan, something that's not worthy of lamenting. Shochatvam, you're lamenting. But pragyam vadamscha bhashase, you're speaking like a very knowledgeable person. And if you're really a pandita, known person, he says, gatasun agatasumsha nanu shochanti pandita. That something that's not worthy of lamentation, you're lamenting. A real pandit doesn't care. You see, in the life of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in his pastimes, every time he met someone who he knew was qualified but was suffering with pride, he cut that pride. And he gave them an opportunity to serve him as the way of, or the means of giving up that pride. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, Prakashananda Saraswati, Keshava Kashmiri, very, very qualified persons. But he gives them some chance to serve as a way of counteracting that pride. Basically, pride means I will not serve. And to serve a Vaishnava then breaks that pride. I don't want to serve, I want to be served. That's pride. Why do I want to be served? Because I'm someone very important. I have some gifts and qualities and abilities and whatever. But when we meet the Mahat, the great person, we shut up and serve. That's the best way to get rid of pride. But Prabhupada also, all these big, big people, Prabhupada was short in stature, but he was so big in his spiritual stature that they would all bow down to him. And then Yogantarayan, oh, there's a verse in Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, second chapter, right in the beginning. Shushusho Shraddhanasya Vasudeva Katharuchi Syan Mahatsevaya Vipra Punyatirthane Shevanath. He says the great service is done by serving the great personalities, because by that gesture, one gets the gift of taste for Krishna Katha. Without serving the Vaishnavas, there is no taste for Krishna Katha. Try as much, it's not possible. Prahlad Maharaj gives these three verses to explain this. Matirna Krishne Paratasvatova Mitobhipadyeta Grahavratanam. That a person who's very proud and arrogant about his possessions and household, he cannot think of Krishna on his own, by the help of others, or by conducting a little conference about it. And he gives the only one way. He says, Mahi yasam pada rajobhishekam. Unless one takes the dust from the feet of a great person and takes a bath with that dust, one cannot think of Krishna. And the third, he says, Yogantarayan Maunena. So when obstacles come on our path, the generally the first tendency is to blame someone. Or the second thing is to complain. So difficult. So easy. Some complaining. So here the countermeasure is Yogantarayan Zip Maunena. No complaining. And so we see that in the lives of great, great devotees, they never complained. Somehow they learned. Of course, it requires spiritual strength, no doubt. But they never complained. They did not whine. They did not complain. So here's the example, or two examples, in honor of great women in the great women in scriptures. First is Uttara. Uttara was the daughter of King Uttara. She was the wife of Arjuna and the mother of Abhimanyu. Wife of Abhimanyu and mother of Parikshit Maharaj. Sorry. Uttara was offered as a wife to Arjuna, but he said no. So now here's this lady who comes from a Kshatriya family. She's married to Abhimanyu. She was married at the age of 14. And Abhimanyu, her husband, was only 16. And the battlefield was, the Kurukshetra war was in such a situation that Yudhishthir Maharaj had to request Abhimanyu to enter the war scene without the express permission of Arjuna. And Abhimanyu had been tasked to break the Chakravyuha formation. Chakravyuha is a particular circular formation of armies that is very, very difficult to break. If not, then that whole circle encompasses the enemy and chokes the enemy. And Abhimanyu only knew how to go in. He did not know how to come out. You know the story. When Abhimanyu was in the womb of his mother, and Arjuna was narrating how to... Who's Abhimanyu's mother? Subhadra Devi. Right? Yes? No? Yeah, Subhadra. So when Arjuna was narrating, he was very chivalrously how to break the formation and how to come out of it. Subhadra fell asleep, because what will women do with war talk? You know, this is how you break the formation. So many elephants are there, the arrows are there. Arjuna was all excited. Subhadra fell asleep. Nice, but you know, what can she do about it? But Abhimanyu, who was in the womb, he was listening. This entire, military secret. So Arjuna explained the whole thing as to how to get in. And then he suddenly realized that Subhadra is asleep. He said, "What? You're sleeping?" Subhadra said, sorry. Arjuna said, "Forget it. Looks like you're not interested in war talk." So he didn't complete the story of how to come out. So Abhimanyu only knew how to get in, but did not know how to come out. It was 16-year-old young boy, I guess. So Yudhishthir Maharaj asked him to fight. And Abhimanyu alone completely decimated the Kaurava army. But then he was murdered very ruthlessly by all these great persons. They had ambushed on him and they'd killed him. And Jayadratha had laughingly kicked the dead body of Abhimanyu. This is why Arjuna was very angry. Anyway, so Abhimanyu died on the battlefield, which means Uttara became a widow by the time she was just married. That's a big loss. And her son, Parikshit Maharaj, after some years, was cursed to die. So she lost her son also. But we never find Uttara complaining. In fact, in Bhagavatam, there is a verse that when Parikshit Maharaj, who was in her womb, was going to be killed by the Brahmastra that... I'm losing names. So that Ashwatthama had released. What is the verse that Uttara says? She runs to Krishna and says, "Krishna, Krishna, Mahabaho, Yoga Nam, Bhakta Nam, Abhayankara, Yatra Mritru Parasparam." She says, "Wherever I see, there's only death, and you're the only shelter. You are the only one who can remove fear from the hearts of your devotees." But she never said, "Hey, why me?" No complaining. Then Draupadi, another example. Draupadi was not born, from mother, father. Draupadi was born directly from the sacrificial fire. And Draupadi and her brother, both. Drishtadyumna and Draupadi. So she is a very special lady. She also had the same problem, some difficulty. Of course, I'm not sharing the example of these two women because I'm hinting that only women complain. It's not like that. These are great women that I have great respect for, so I like to speak about them. Draupadi, she was given the... Unknowingly, Kunti had spoken that, "Oh, you should share this gift among the five of you." So she became the wife of the five brothers. We hear a king with many wives. But we never hear, except this one example of a wife with five husbands. This is very extraordinary. That's how she got the name Panchali. Of course, she was also from Panchala Desh. Anyway, so she got five husbands. And they're not like wimpy husbands. They're very demanding, powerful kings. And her life was full of difficulty. That she was wagered in the game of dice. She was lost. She was dragged by her hair in the middle of the assembly of only men sitting there. There was no one else, all men. She was dragged by her hair, insulted. Karna called her a prostitute. Any self-respecting man cannot tolerate it. What to speak of Kshatriya? Dushasana disrobed her in that public, in front of everyone. For all these ladies, shyness is a great jewel, a great asset, and that was violated. So she was disrobed completely, or at least attempted to be disrobed. And her five husbands, who were so powerful, could not do anything. They just sat there, almost emasculated. They could not do anything. Yet, she never complained. She never said to Krishna, "What are you doing?" Never, never complained. Or accused Krishna, said, "You know what? If this is what it means to be a devotee, better not to be a devotee." No. In fact, she only glorifies Krishna. "Oh, how wonderful you are. You're my only protection. You're my only shelter." So, yogantaran maunena. Maunena is this silent in that sense. And Prabhupada says the real meaning of mauna, silence, is to glorify Krishna or speak about Krishna. That is called silence. And himsan kama dupa, kama di anihaya. And the best way to get rid of envy is to stop sense gratification. How are the two connected? Sense gratification is an expression of envy. I want to grab the resources that are available out there. The more I have, the happier I am, because someone else has less. And the more I get, the happier I am. And anyone who obstructs that, they better not mess with me. So envy causes harm. My life is more important than someone else's. My needs are more important than someone else's. My desires are more important than someone else's. So naturally one becomes, from sense gratification, one becomes extremely envious, to the degree that they will kill anyone who obstructs or interferes in that sense gratification. So here, the key word is anihaya. Prabhupada says simply. Simply by curbing one's senses, one overcomes envy. Because once you don't have, envy is this, another way of seeing it is competitive mentality. Once you're not into sense gratification, you're not into competition. What's there? They're okay, well, fine, let them. When Rupa Goswami was confronted by one person, when Rupa Goswami was in Vrindavan, and a great scholar came and he said, "I have a desire to debate with you because I want the certificate that I have defeated Rupa Goswami." Nobody could defeat Rupa Goswami. Rupa Goswami said, "There's no need for any debate. I will write you a letter that I accede, I accept defeat at your hands. Here, take this letter. Happy? Go away." Because for Rupa Goswami, it didn't matter whether someone defeated him or not. For the other one, he was important. As soon as he came out of Rupa Goswami's Ter Kadamba place, Jiva Goswami was not far from there. He said, "Come here. What do you think you are? You rascal, you're getting a certificate from Rupa Goswami, the greatest Vaishnav, And he defeated him in 5 minutes, you know, basically shred him to pieces and killed his pride. But Rupa Goswami became very angry at it. He said, what are you doing? If you have this competitive mentality, you're not fit for residing in Vrindavan. You should get out of Vrindavan. And what's that word? Starts with an O. You banish, huh? You banish, starts with a B. Ostracized, banished him from Vrindavan. So when there's no competitive, then there's no envy. Huh? You want to win? Fine, go ahead. You first. Envy means I first. And once sense control is there, oh, you first, no problem. When we are fasting and there's nice prasadam, me first. But if one's senses are controlled, we're happy to serve others. No problem. It shows up in practical ways as well. So these are points for enhancing our character. And these are cultural points. Because it's culture that forms the character of a person. So now we may have a question. Oh, very nice. Stories are wonderful. But in our day-to-day life, either at work or business or whatever situation, if we are too nice, then we get slaughtered. Because we may take the humble path, but others are not taking the humble path. They can crush us. Yeah, they can. But we should remember that in the lives of Draupadi and Uttara, they have something which we are also being offered. Is the association of Krishna. And Krishna protects. Krishna has given a promise. Arjuna declared it boldly that my devotees shall never perish. It's a loud, clear promise from Krishna. So we may get crushed this way, that way, seemingly, but something that will never get crushed is our shelter in Krishna. And Krishna will protect. However he decides to protect, that's up to him. But he will always, always come to protect his devotees. And that's what we want. More than anything else. And that's what we want to aspire for. Because that's what Prabhupada is gifting us. Beyond all of these things. Beyond envy, beyond pride, and lamentation, all of that. Is the association of Krishna. Because everything else will come and go except Krishna. Okay, any comments or questions? Mohit, Yashoganandan. Thank you, Mohit.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. I always struggle with this because there's so many dualities even within the scriptures. It's the competitiveness or not. So when Arjuna didn't want to fight, even though that was his duty, Krishna told him, hey, you must fight. So that's the ultimate competition, if you will, right? Because it's his duty. So when we're performing our duties in the world and in our work, how can we assimilate the instruction that Krishna provided Arjuna and reconcile what you just said in terms of just leave it to Krishna in a competitive environment at work and think and he will protect you.
So Arjuna did not fight. Oh, whatever. If it hits, hits. If it doesn't hit, whatever. That was not Arjuna's mentality. He was fighting. Fiercely fighting. But he was very conscious that it is Krishna's strength and Krishna's guidance and Krishna's order. If one is conscious of that, great. Very good. Prabhupada was a very fierce competitor in that sense. You know, in terms of book distribution and preaching, it was very fierce. But it was very clear that this is for Krishna. I can't say in yours, but I can say in my case, that's always not clear. it feels like, or at best intellectually, this is for Krishna, but in the core, it's not for Krishna necessarily. It's for some insecurity, something that I'm addressing. And Krishna wants us to go beyond that. That this is genuinely for Krishna. And it cannot be like this. It has to be progressive. So 100% it is for me, and I say it is for Krishna. And some transformation will be 99.99% for me and 0.01 for Krishna. Okay, so that's progress. But that inside, you know, when no one is watching, we don't have to tell anyone. In our solitude, we are convinced that this is for Krishna. We don't need anyone's certificate. We know for ourselves how much is it for Krishna. If that is clear, great. For most, it's not. It is something else. So our Krishna consciousness mostly is at the intellectual level. We know the right things to say. We say the right things. We even intellectually speak about it, but we don't feel it that way. Of course, I'm saying we as if everyone. I'm using the more general pronoun, we. And that's where that real... And therefore, I began with that the real character comes out at the point of adversity. When there is an adversity, how does a person respond? What's the first thing that they go for? And if it's for Krishna, fantastic. Jai. But we can check. We know. We have our own little barometer or thermometer, whatever, meter, to check where does our consciousness go at the point of adversity. All these great persons, they're fixed. Uttara, Draupadi, Prahlad, Dhruva. Dhruva is a little bit more relatable story because he was really angry. But Prahlad never was. Narada, Yudhishthir Maharaj. They had no such thing. Does that address for you?
I struggle with it because, I'm not exactly sure where I've heard it is, but I've heard, and maybe I've totally misinterpreted it, I'm sure that's the case, but I've heard something along the lines of, you know, when you're in the material world and you're performing a duty, which is you're a grihastha, you're providing for your family, when you're in the material world, be a staunch materialist, fight. Because you have a responsibility. And so I have a hard time reconciling the two.
So let's see if we can take that a little further. For a householder, working in the world and providing for the family is not considered grihastha duty. It's just not a complete understanding. It is an aspect of one's duty. But the real grihastha duty is that the household is free of worries so they can worship Krishna. If Krishna factor is not there, one is not counted as grihastha. One is counted as grihamedi, means very committed to one's family, one's household. But the absence of Krishna. So that's the first factor. Now for surviving in the world, one has one's skills and one does what they are supposed to do properly. It's not a lackadaisical approach that Krishna will take care. That's not okay. Krishna will take care, but I need to show Krishna that I'm committed to serving him. And that's our demonstration. I'm committed to the members he has given me in my family. Therefore, I do things properly. That's responsibility versus Krishna will take care, whatever. He's feeding everyone, he'll feed us all. No. That's a lackadaisical approach.
Hare Krishna. When you were sharing the story of the scholar challenging Rupa Goswami, and Rupa Goswami's response was, okay, take the certificate, but Jiva Goswami felt the need to curb the scholar's pride. Could you just expand a little bit about like the nature of the Vaishnava's compassion and Rupa Goswami making the deliberate decision, okay, not worth it? Is it because the scholar didn't approach him in a mood of wanting to let go of that pride, and so he just saw him as okay?
It was, at least how I understood the pastime, is Rupa Goswami was not into cutting their pride. That was not his mood. He was just busy writing these beautiful books about Krishna's pastimes. He was just not in the mood for engaging into any debate and all of that. Just not in the frame. Like, for what? And it's not going to hurt Rupa Goswami's fame that, oh, he lost to such and such, so now we should not read Rupa Goswami's books. Rupa Goswami didn't care whether someone read or not. He wrote because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave him the order, you shall write. Okay. So he was just not into it. Not that he has to cut his pride, or it's not like he has to be, oh, my compassion means now I have to cut his pride. Not necessary. Jiva Goswami did. He did it as a service to his guru, which is right, which is the right response. We shouldn't say, my guru said go away, yeah, you should, it's all right, my guru lost. No. He stood up and did the right thing.
So then I'm a little confused about Rupa Goswami's speech toward Jiva Goswami in chastising him, saying you have no place in Vrindavan with this mentality.
And that is also right. Here I'll tell you something. You know that pastime when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu struck Advaita Acharya? Because Advaita Acharya was speaking impersonal philosophy. So you're a drama person, so you go to that scene. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is beating Advaita Acharya. And Advaita Acharya is in ecstasy. Sita Thakurani, she's crying. Srivas Thakur, they're all in shock. They're pleading Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, don't do it, don't do it. Others were, I think, were all bystanders. They're all calling out Krishna's name. Who's Krishna conscious here in this scene? Everyone. But they're all approaching Krishna differently. They're all Krishna conscious within their role, and they're perfectly Krishna conscious. Sita Thakurani is saying, no, no, he's an old man, please don't beat him. Is she Krishna conscious? Definitely. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because we don't have to say that he's Krishna conscious. Advaita Acharya, everyone around, everyone is Krishna conscious. Everyone's expressing their Krishna consciousness. Just the dimensions of it is different. The facet of it is different. So similarly, Jiva Goswami saying is fine. Rupa Goswami saying is also like that. You're all wonderfully Krishna, just different facets of it. And Jiva Goswami also humbly said, yes, whatever you say. And he left. You know the story. Sanatan Goswami came and brought him back. Then it shows Rupa Goswami's greatness. As soon as Sanatan Goswami says, all right. That's the Dambham Mahadupasya. Once the great person said, fine, I'll follow. They're all being Krishna, they're all expressing their Krishna consciousness perfectly. Subhagavu.
I was just thinking about that, the third line, Yugantara Janam Maunena, that you explain of Maunena silence as not complaining. And is for counteracting obstacles in your path of yoga. So in your path of devotional service, we find so many obstacles, and strong recommendation here by Narada Muni is that you remain silent, and the silence, as you explained, which I thought it was very nice, is not complaining. However, I try to understand also the recommendation that is there, say an example of Arjuna. If Arjuna didn't express or lament, he won't be able to be instructed by Krishna and being able to help elevate him to the position of Krishna consciousness.
Right.
So the importance that we have, you know, to actually express, you know, our, and you see in many situations, devotees, you know, lamentation for devotees on their the almost hopelessness of overcoming obstacles in Krishna consciousness is a very common thing. So that and this, you know, applies, you know, as lamentation, or there's a lamentation that is progressive, there's a lamentation that is, you know, regressive in your path, you know, like that. How?
Lamentation is always regressive. This mauna does not mean that one cannot express anything. Therefore, I qualified it as mauna is not blaming or not complaining. But to always ask, how can I improve my service? How can I overcome this obstacle? It's fine. It behooves, because pariprashna is an aspect to receive mercy and to see the truth. So without pariprashna, upadekshanti te jnanam doesn't manifest. So speaking about it to the concerned person is perfectly okay. It should be done. But complaining with anyone we meet, you know, nothing's happening, you know, that's not constructive. That was my understanding of mauna. But speaking to that, Arjuna speaking to Krishna is perfectly okay. So it's not like Arjuna sat in, at least my understanding, sat with everyone and said, you know, nothing's working out, you know, so difficult, you know, they're complaining. They're like, why am I only fighting? Why is Nakula not, you know, doing his thing? Sahadev, come on, man. Yeah. Why am I shooting all the arrows? Why is Dronacharya, all of them only fighting me? Why are they not killing Nakula? I'm being light, making light of it, but it's like that. Or Draupadi sitting in the kitchen and complaining, oh, this is not right. Draupadi was calling Krishna's name. I mean, that's wonderful, we chant nicely, but practically, you know, we have to take care of things. So we bring it to the concerned persons and try to overcome those obstacles. That's fine. That's totally fine. Or you post on the internet. Nowadays, that's the fashion. You don't like something and you post it for everyone to read.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji.
This Prabhuji, is a tough one. He's always the... Yes, Prabhu.
You narrated the story of Eklavya.
Yes.
To highlight how
Dumba.
Pride was, you know, came in his way. But after hearing the story, I feel just the other way.
Oh.
Even though Dronacharya did not instruct him at all, at any stage, he took a position of, you know, accepting Dronacharya as his guru. And Dronacharya acted in a more, you know, negative way, even though he was he knew that he had no role in Eklavya becoming such a great archer, he asked him to give Guru Dakshina. So how do we understand this?
Dronacharya had a role. Eklavya learnt it from Dronacharya by observation. So Dronacharya had a role. Dronacharya is considered a Brahmin. Prabhupada writes in the purport, in the first chapter itself, that he taught Drishtadyumna. Someone will say, what kind of foolish person. He knew Drishtadyumna was born from the fire only for one purpose, was to kill Dronacharya himself, but he still gave knowledge. And Prabhupada writes, this is the quality of a Brahmin, that he will not desist from teaching someone, even if that person is going to kill him. So the same Brahmin vision has not gone away when he's chastising or punishing Ekalavya. Now for the common eye, it looks like poor Ekalavya and look at Dronacharya. It is actually the opposite. And therefore Bhaktisiddhanta writes the commentary that Ekalavya is cutting his finger, we think of it as greatness. It's actually a punishment for him. And had he not cut his finger, then he suffers Guru Avagya. We say, no, third verse, third offense against the holy name is Guru Avagya. Neglect of the order of the Guru. And in the Vedic paradigm, that is considered like the greatest thing to do, the greatest offense to commit. Any other offense is still workout. Yani kani cha papani. We say every nice thing. Yani kani cha papani. Brahma hatya adhikani cha. Even killing Brahman, you circumambulate Tulsi Devi and she'll forgive. Tani tani pranashyanti. Pradakshina pade pade. But the moment it is Guru Avagya, finished. Therefore Dronacharya gave him such an order. You cut your finger. Because now it's almost like a chess checkmate. If you don't, you're finished. If you do, you're finished. This is the thought of Dronacharya, to help cut that pride in him. Because we don't know how in the future Dronacharya could see that this will turn out into a very negative situation. Does that help in any way? So definitely always understand, the pity and sympathy always goes for the seeming victim. So therefore that's natural. Finger got cut, Dronacharya asked. But there is a whole thing behind it. Ekalavya could cause a lot more damage. So better to take his finger and help him than to make things worse for him. Dronacharya could have said, cut off your head and give it to me. That also. Yes, Mataji.
Thank you. I'm just following up on Sambhav Prabhu's question about silence. So when you were speaking about that line, I was thinking that it had to do with, to your point, not complaining and not being, taking a victim mentality and not questioning why it was happening to you, but rather I interpreted silence as meaning that, you know, you introspect and you understand the spiritual nature of the obstacles and the possible lessons or, you know, growth, spiritual growth opportunity it represents, rather than an active, like, so it's more of a, the way I was looking at it from your example, and I guess what I'm asking for is your confirmation, is it's more of an internal process of silence rather than an external, I'm not going to do anything about it, and I'm just going to sit back and take it. Rather, it's more internal, right?
I like you, how you say it much better than how I said it, but that's true, yes. You said it far better than I did. I spoke for 45 minutes and you said it in one line. It's really much better. Eloquence is truth spoken concisely. Jitendra Prabhu.
Throughout the Mahabharata and, you know, our whole experience here, there's a lot of psychological warfare going on, you know, with the, you know, the Pandavas and the Kauravas. One example I liked is when Mahatma Gandhi was doing the non-violence, non-cooperation thing, and this Chandra Bose fella said, this ain't going to work. So he stepped up and, you know, he went to battle, you know. Do you know that story?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I read it for too many years.
Pardon me?
Unfortunately, I read it for too many years and I can't forget it even if I want to. Our old history book was nothing but Indian freedom struggle. It was a struggle to read it year after year after year. But that's why they call it Indian freedom struggle. We were struggling for freedom from that story. My gosh, year after year after year. Oh. No, nothing else in history. Just that.
Well, for us Westerners, it's kind of a novel thing.
Civil war.
Yeah.
Just the way in history, it's only civil war, this, that. For us all, India, independence, whatever, freedom movement. There's nothing about Mahabharata, nothing about the history, nothing. It comes only between when Mangal Pandey had to bite the lard or pigskin bullet casing to time till the British had to leave India. It's like, How many of us have read it again and again? It's so boring. So,
one comedian said, can we really have a civil war? Oh, I'm terribly sorry.
So. Okay, thank you very much. Shri Prabhupada ki jai. Shri Bhagavatam ki jai.